Xerxes was on the seventh level of scaffolding that surrounded the outside of the construction. The shell of the building had been erected. All that remained on the outer workings were the decorations and the placing of the roof. The interior was still being constructed, although all load-bearing walls were in place. Odyssey was glad to catch his sec chief before he attended to the close inspection of the inside. On the outer work, there was less to do, and his inspection was more routine. As sec chief, he had to ensure that the work was carried out well, and that the workers didn't slack in any way. Security was about prevention of problems as much as killing those who transgressed. It was a philosophy that Xerxes had brought to his job that had been alien to his predecessors. Yet Odyssey had given him his head, as it had yielded results in the shape of greater productivity. The downside to catching him on the outside inspection was having to climb seven levels of scaffolding. This was still three below the roof level, for the new temple towered above the surrounding buildings, which were only four stories at most. But this level was still high enough for a man with an uneasiness about heights, an uneasiness that Odyssey had to keep disguised. He had been taught from an early age that a leader should never show fear. Taking a deep breath, he scaled the scaffolding until he was level with his sec chief.
Odyssey? Master, what brings you out to see me when I am about my humble tasks?
I have received word from our people in Memphis, and I wish to tell you of it and of my plans. Someplace where we will not be overheard.
While the notion that there were Atlantis spies in Memphis was something that was kept from the majority of the people, there was little chance of their being overheard this far up. It would, however, get him inside and away from the edge of scaffold and sky, which loomed too large for comfort. Xerxes indicated that the leader follow him through the nearest portal, which gave onto an open plan room, currently being marked for division by masons. As they entered, a stranger would have assumed that Xerxes, with his tall, thin frame, long, aristocratic nose, and thick head of curls, was the natural leader. Certainly there was authority in the way he dismissed the masons and indicated that the guards stay outside on the scaffold. By contrast, Odyssey shuffled in his wake, shorter and stockier, his dark brown hair thinning at the crown, bent over by his worries and concerns.
So, Master, you've had word.
Your nightcrawlers were correct. There are strangers in Memphis, and they do seem to have arrived on foot. This is most strange, as I can but wonder how they managed to journey so far without transport of some kind. However, there is little point in such speculation. They are here, and that is all there is to it.
But from your tone, Master, I can deduce that they are no normal interlopers.
Brother, anyone who could arrive at this point on foot or would wish to could be described as normal is an interesting question. The fact that they have arrived is neither here nor there, yet there are things about them that are of the utmost concern. They're number six, and my reports say that they seem to know much of the faiths that underpin our society. They have been spied upon while in private discussion, and two of them, an old man and a black woman, seem to have a knowledge that could be either useful or dangerous.
Dependent upon whether they are for or against us.
Exactly, Xerxes. I would like to know more of them. And there is another of interest. A woman who speaks of calling upon the powers of the earth to assist her in times of great need.
A practitioner of occult arts?
It could very well be. I would like to learn more of her. If she truly has ways of tapping the hidden powers beyond this dimension, then her secrets would please the travelers when they return.
You wish that I organize her capture?
Yes, as well as the old man and the black woman. I want to know from whence their knowledge springs, if they are dangerous, and if there is anything they can tell us that would add to our own understanding. It is possible that they may have arrived at this time as messengers, as we are so close to alignment.
So you would wish me to arrange their capture without harming them?
Well, I said only that they may be messengers. They are equally likely to be enemies. We should take no chances. The prime objective is to get them away from Memphis. If they prove too much of a problem, then it will be safer to kill them.
Affinity hadn't seen any of his new friends since the first evening. Not until Doc had taken him to one side and questioned him about the nature of the beliefs held by the people of Memphis and Atlantis. Although the young man had been glad to answer him and found something in the old man with which he could feel a kind of kinship, there was something about Doc's manner that made him uneasy. It wasn't a thing he could easily pin down, less a concrete cause than a nebulous feeling of unease, as though behind the easy manner of Tanner, there lay something dark, that was waiting for the chance to surface. This uneasy feeling grew within him, and the next day he sought out Cyan. The tall, willowy wife of the Vill leader had known Affinity before his escape, and they shared a common bond. Both had been born to families that had rank within the rigid hierarchy of Atlantis, and both had led life of comparative luxury before opting to risk an escape to freedom. There were those in Memphis who couldn't understand why they should give up such privilege for the hardships of living in Memphis. Had those who had risked their lives for freedom done so only because they were at the bottom of the chain? If they had been born into a life of privilege, would they have stayed? Affinity doubted that. Memphis was a small enough vill for most to know the others. There were none he could think of who would have preferred to stay beneath the oppression of Odyssey, even with comparative comforts. But some perhaps doubted their own motivations more than Affinity, and he was aware of a residual wariness among some of the others. Cyan, once Lemure had made her his wife, was even more open to these suspicions, and the two had spoken of that often. It was a small community, and those who had escaped from privilege were smaller still in number. It was natural to seek support. Affinity felt that he could share his concerns with Cyan. He went to her building after finishing in the mason's shop. His lack of guile and fighting ability in allowing himself to be captured by the companions had led to his being ejected from the Sec Force by Mark. There was a rapid turnover of Sec men coming and going, as only a core small in number showed themselves to be even partially able. To be ejected was no shame as such, but nonetheless he still felt a twinge of regret as he entered the building, which in addition to being the dwelling for the leader and his spouse, also housed the Sec Force and Lemure's council. Cyan was painting when Affinity was shown into her chambers by a Sec guard. There were always three on watch over Lemure and Cyan, and although she was used to their presence, Affinity found it a little disturbing. Cyan left her painting and greeted Affinity. His response was stilted and nervous, making it obvious he was preoccupied.
What concerns you so that you lose all familiarity in my presence?
She led him to a long table and seated him before pouring wine for them.
I feel uneasy speaking on matters that demand confidentiality when we are not alone. The matter on which I wish to speak is one that is perhaps delicate to broach.
For the first matter of your concern, I can only say that the men who guard Lemure and myself know their duty. They are not to report on or talk of anything they may see or hear within this building, lest it be contrary to the greater good. I have never been aware of anything that has been said that shouldn't have been.
This is all well and good if they are true to their word, but sometimes it seems as though Atlantis knows of what we feel and think as soon as we do ourselves.
You think they may have agents that move among us, gathering intelligence?
It is sometimes spoken of, and events lend credence to such an idea.
What a strange idea. I cannot say it is one which I have often encountered myself. From where, I wonder, would it emanate?
I know not what you imply, but these are only half suspicions that I should not perhaps have even voiced. It was only a passing notion, and one that is taking us away from the matter I really wish to discuss.
Very well. We shall say no more about it, but you have my word that whatever you say shall not reach beyond this chamber. Now, by all means, continue.
Hesitatingly, Affinity began to voice his concerns about Doc and the way in which he had probed the young man for information. When he finished, Affinity looked at Cyan imploringly.
I cannot say why this worries you so. I would have thought it was an obvious course of action for our allies to wish to know more about us. Such knowledge could only assist in their understanding of our plight.
But why did they not ask openly? Why send Dr. Tanner to question me, a humble mason? Why did their leader Ryan not ask these things of Lemure or yourself?
Perhaps to openly question in such a way could be construed as rudeness or hostility in their etiquette. After all, as they know little of our ways, so do we, correspondingly, know little of theirs. Perhaps they saw that Tanner and yourself had forged an acquaintanceship, and it wouldn't be such an imposition under their way for him to ask these things of you.
I see, but even so, there was something about the manner of the man that suggested that there were things that were important to him in a manner far more personal than that of the group.
But why would this be? I feel sure that you are worrying for no reason. Perhaps you have overlooked the fact that no matter how well you seem to understand Doc Tanner, he is still from the outside, with different ways that may seem alien and unnerving to us, when in fact they have no import at all.
Of course, that would explain it, and it is logical. I should perhaps have considered this before even coming to see you. I fear that I may have wasted your time.
Dear child, you could never waste mine nor anyone's time when you have a genuine concern for the safety of your compatriots. Calm your fears and go about your business now.
Affinity left her company feeling reassured. He was so wrapped up in his own relief that he didn't notice that the Sect Guard watched him leave with interest, nor that the guard hadn't been patrolling the corridors, but seemed to be in the same location as when he had shown Affinity into Cyan's chamber. For her own part, Cyan was nowhere near as unconcerned as she had led Affinity to believe. She thought it likely that his initial impression had been correct. The old man had wanted the information for more than reference to his group. There was an underlying motive. Whatever it was, it could be disruptive, and that was information that it was invaluable for her to possess. Knowledge informed power, in many ways was power. It just depended on how a person chose to use it. The night was cloudless, balmy, and the woodlands were silent. With a surfeit of silver light from the three-quarter moon, it seemed as though it would be an easy night for the chosen Sect Patrol. Especially as they felt more confident, sharper after their short bout of training with the companions. They felt looser, more alert, and more at ease with their weapons. The line between confidence and overconfidence is narrow, especially for those who have no experience on which to base judgment. The Sect Patrol worked its way through the densely packed wood in a loose line. Even with the canopy above and the shadows cast by the trunks, it was still easy for them to keep at least two of their companions in sight at any given time. Not that it mattered. They had a shared feeling that nothing could go wrong this night. Jason had been with Mark on the expedition when they had encountered the companions. Since then, he felt that he had learned so much from the strangers. He held his blade loosely in his palm. As he looked up at the clear skies, he felt secure. There was complete silence, no signs of movement. But then, he wasn't really giving it his full attention. His hand stayed slack on his blade, even as the muscular arm snaked around his neck and the hand clamped over his mouth. Even as the blade slipped under his ribs, the pain like a white-hot needle in him. His vision closed into a tunnel of blackness that grew tighter, light receding into the distance, as though he were traveling backward at immense speed. The faintest scent of oil and sweat, sweet and rank, reached into his brain before it began to shut down. Jason was dead before the Nightcrawler even let his body slip to the woodland floor. The crawler looked down, prodded him idly with her toe, then gave a short nod of satisfaction before slithering back into the shadows in search of additional prey. It was an 8-man sect party from Memphis, and the orders to the Nightcrawlers were clear. One among the party was a traitor who would arrange for their access to the walled ville. If possible, they were to leave the sect alive so that it wouldn't look suspicious for the insider to be left standing. But some had to be killed to make the attack seem authentic. Jason had drawn the short straw. His only mistake, other than lack of awareness, was to be on one end of the strung-out sect line. At the other end, a man named Homer was also being eliminated, a crawler dropping on him from a tree, landing astride his shoulders, pulling back his head, and running a razor-sharp blade across his throat. Along the line, crawlers watched the Sect Patrol go by. They moved stealthily between cover, making it hard to distinguish their exact outline, making themselves visible as little more than a shadow in the night. It was enough to make the Sect Party believe that their numbers were at full strength. As they moved, their pace was controlled by the thick foliage. They began to move out of phase. It became harder to keep sight of one another the deeper and darker the woodland became, and it was time for the crawlers to take advantage. The Sect Party was already down two. Another two were put out of action, though not killed. Slipping from the shadows without making a sound, two Nightcrawlers came upon Sect men and downed them with swift blows. Four down, four left standing. Three were to be left alone, ignorantly blundering their way through the patrol. One was waiting.
I thought you were never going to arrive.
Shut up! Go!
The Sect man was around 5'7", and thick-set. By contrast, the dark figure beside him was more than 6 feet, and almost invisible in the darkness. Even if the remaining Sect man had seen their traitorous companion standing in the woods, He would have seemed to be alone unless they were so close that the crawler would have a chance to dispose of them.